Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Pelicans playing the Clippers in Los Angeles. 39-38, Pels with the lead. Anthony Davis, a non-factor in this one, just 4 points on 2 of 7 shooting. And he's not on the court right now. 12 from Julius Randle, 11 for Jrue Holiday. Frank Jackson has not scored off the bench. Clippers just retook the lead there. We'll keep an eye on that one. And then at halftime, we'll have Chris Connor, the Bird Rights, coming on to break it down for us. Also have Sports Libs coming up this hour. The NFL has set their officiating lineups for the weekend's game. We'll tell you who's going to be officiating the Saints-Rams game. And a little spoiler alert here. Trending good for the Saints, at least this man who has officiated games before. It's gone pretty well for the Saints. We'll tell you about that in just a little bit. First, though, I want to return to a caller that I got last hour, which is fine. He was a Falcons fan in Atlanta. We reached 38 states at night, and I invite all fans of any fan base to come on in here and chat and maybe talk a little smack and do whatever you want as long as it's respectful here. I have no problem with it. But I'm paraphrasing the caller. He said it would be rude for Saints fans to show up in Atlanta should the Saints make the Super Bowl. Yeah, I don't really get that. That was about as soft as you can absolutely get here. I have a texter from the 912 radio stations in Atlanta calling this Hate the Aints Week and Pro Ramamania Week. Real hate, keep them birds off WWL. As long as it's respectful, a little tongue-in-cheek, I mean, I feel like, I don't know if I'd be doing it on my show because it's not my shtick, but I think a lot of shows here in the city, if it was a Super Bowl here in New Orleans and the Falcons were playing in an NFC title game, I bet most shows here, a lot of shows anyways, would have something similar. You know, hate the Dirty Birds and, you know, love the Rams Week or whatever it is. I don't have a problem with that at all. Again, as long as it's respectful. Again, it's not my shtick. I wouldn't be doing anything like that on my show. And I always welcome any fans to call on in. We have a regular caller, Joe, to the show, who's a Cowboys fan. And always, we have some good conversation. Back and forth, good-natured ribbing. Cowboys lost. That was a little weird to me, though. Like, it's soft if Saints fans show up and rude if Saints fans show up for the Super Bowl in Atlanta. Come on now. Get out of here with that. Let's go to Justin Uptown on the phone lines. You want to talk about that caller, I think, and Falcons fans? Go ahead.
Hello?
Yep, you're on, Justin.
Man, I had a feeling that this was going to happen. The Falcons fans were going to get mad because the Hoodats are going up to Atlanta. And just like you said, man, you hit the head on the nail. Like, that's soft. Like, that's really soft, you know, that y'all are looking for some action just because we want to come up there and celebrate. And I'm telling you now, like, a fight's going to happen. Like, something's going to break out. And they're going to be the reason for it. Like, it just can't take, you know, it's all in sports. You know, your team lose, I win.
Right.
You know, we lose. You know, we're prepared for y'all to, you know, talk a little bit trash for us. You know, we understand that it's a sport and it's a line to be crossed, you know, but that, man, they're too soft to even just, you know, enjoy the fun out of it. You know, that's soft. And that's what I hate about Falcons fans.
Yeah, Justin, me too. Like, I'm all for the back and forth and the trash talk and everything like that. I think we're in New Orleans. We're pretty used to this because, you know, we're kind of a hub of major sporting events. So we've had Bama fans come in here for championship games and Sugar Bowls, right? And for the most part, there's obviously bad apples everywhere. But we're pretty gracious hosts here. Right? And it sounds like, at least from that caller, I don't want to speak for the entire city, that they're not going to be very gracious hosts, which is a little bit of a bummer. By the way, let me say this. I think I've talked about this on the show before. I really like Atlanta as a city. It's got a great downtown. It's got vibrant nightlife, very good restaurants, pretty good music, good clubs. Like, the city's cool. I like visiting there. I really do. I've told you that before. I hope that that caller doesn't speak for all Falcons fans, because that would be disappointing. Trash talk all you want. Root for whoever the Saints opponent is. And like I said, even this week, if you want to have Ram-a-mania day or hate the Saints day on your radio stations, cool. That's fine. We'd probably be doing something not on this show, but here locally. But yeah, that's soft. Thanks for the call, Justin. How about Uptown Ruler? Uptown Ruler, what's going on?
Hey, man, let me tell you something. If it's any hate, the Saints fans should hate the Falcons, because the way they beat us 62-7, anybody should hate them for that.
Well, should the Eagles – well, wait a second here. Should the Eagles have hated us just for the Saints beating them 48-7?
No, but we didn't beat the Eagles as bad as the Falcons beat us back in the 70s.
Well, I mean, they ran up the score. Come on. It's professional football.
But I'm saying this: if the Falcons fans hate us, we should hate them from way back.
Okay.
But I'm saying that's what I'm saying. Okay.
Okay.
I mean, look, I have no regrets against Falcons fans personally. I mean, they didn't make it to the Super Bowl. They didn't make it to the playoffs. It's not our fault. I mean, it's not our fault they didn't make it.
If they would have won
a couple more games, they would have made it. But it's not our fault that they didn't make it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, any Falcons fan should be a Saints fan and should be glad the Saints is representing them in the Super Bowl.
Well, I don't know if they have to be glad the Saints are there. I get what you're saying, though, Ruler. I never really talked about this, so let me explain this on the air. I haven't done any 28-3, you know, the skits or bits on this show for the Falcons because, again, not to overuse the phrase, but that's just not my shtick. Like, I think it's kind of old. I'm just being honest. I think it's kind of played out. Like, we get it, and that will always be there for them. But I have better things to talk about on my show. But anybody who wants to do that, that's fine. Like, I'm not going to call them out. Any Vikings fans that would have called, and I think we had them earlier in the year, they want to call and talk about that Marcus Williams play and the miracle in Minneapolis and everything that happened last year. That's all fair game between the lines. Come on now. Come on now, Falcons fans. I know we have Falcons fans listening here. You got to pick us up after that caller we had last hour. That was objectively bad. Text from the 985, already have a place to stay in Atlanta. Definitely going if we win on Sunday. Good, that's great. Those hotel rooms are going to be awfully hard to find. You might have to stay, and I think they're already booked up. You're going to have to stay literally hours away from the city there. Text from the 904, they are nowhere near as humble as us. Who dat, baby? Text from the 904, just wanted to comment on that last call. I live in Atlanta, and I'm a diehard Saints fan, and all the Falcons fans have the same mentality as that guy does. I hope not. And maybe it's just because they don't host a lot of big events. And I'm not, that's not a shot. Maybe it is. Like we do here. Again, we have Georgia fans or Alabama fans coming on in all the time here for big events. We had San Francisco come here for a Super Bowl the year after that atrocious playoff loss for the Saints over in San Francisco. And I remember just how humble and gracious the city was to San Francisco fans during the Super Bowl. I'm not saying we're not going to bark at them and then trash talk to them when they lost. If Saints fans did, that's all fine. We were nice hosts here. We're great hosts here. That's why they got another Super Bowl coming here. That's why they got the national championship coming here. Be better, Atlanta. Be better, Atlanta. Let's go back to the phone lines at 504-260-1870. Carl and Hammond, what say you?
Hey, Seth.
Hey, Carl.
I know somebody in Atlanta who's totally disagreeing with that guy.
Good.
The Chamber of Commerce. There's no way that they want all these Saints fans and all that money. You don't get the Super Bowl to have people stay at home, and you get the Super Bowl to fill your coffers of your city. So maybe the Chamber of Commerce ought to be checking some of these Falcons fans.
Hey, there you go. No doubt about it. Chamber of Commerce wants as many Saints fans over there spending all the money that they can. Thanks for the call, Carl. Tim, you had like the doomsday Falcons fan scenario here. It was the Saints against who again? And I guess it kind of makes sense, right?
Yeah, I was saying if Falcons fans really want to get upset, I guess if the Patriots and the Saints both win on Sunday, I don't know who they would be rooting for in the Super Bowl. Obviously, they lost to the Patriots, and they obviously hate Saints fans. I guess they would be rooting for the game to end in a tie or not happen at all.
They would be rooting for a permanent blackout and the game to get moved or rescheduled or something. I don't know.
Hopefully, they'll hope the lights go out in the stadium.
Right.
I mean, we've seen that before.
Well, yeah. Ooh. Yeah, we have. Boy, that was just ugly. Real ugly. I remember I was watching that. I was at, Jammer, B97. I was actually watching the game at his place, which is in the CBD area, and we were up on the roof at the time, and we were looking at the Superdome, and we saw the lights go out, and we're going, well, that's really weird. And then we walked back down to the place where the TV was, and the lights were all out. And we're going, wow, we saw that happen live. Where were you when that happened?
I was at a Super Bowl party on the West Bank, I think. I don't remember that, but I actually forgot what I was going to say. I was going to say something about the power going out, but I don't remember what.
Well,
I was going
Beyonce
to say.
Pulled the plug. We know that.
Well, yeah, all that electricity they used for her halftime
yes.
show was it was energy.
Right. This was the Beyonce power outage. Again, our Blue Runner Foods opinion poll: who was most responsible for the Saints' comeback? Was it Drew Brees, Michael Thomas, Marshawn Lattimore, or Sean Payton? Marshawn Lattimore, 38%, his two interceptions, most responsible. 24% saying Michael Thomas, 22% Peyton, and just 16% for Drew Brees. You remember now, Tim?
I was going to say, ironically, that same year where the power went out in the Superdome was the last time a number one seed lost in the NFC Championship or AFC Championship. I think it was the 49ers and the Ravens that were both number two seeds that year. They both won, so... If it happens again, hopefully it's the Patriots that win and not, you know, the Rams.
Yeah, remember, last 5 years, one seeds have won the Super Bowl. That might bode well for the Saints. Home teams have never lost a conference title game in that span either. It might be a good omen for the Saints there, too. When we come back here, Saints against the Rams is a little middle America versus coastal elite, white collar, blue collar. And I think this is a pretty good embodiment of that. Talk about that a little bit. More of your calls, too. Coming back, I'm Seth Dunlap, and this is The Last Lap on WWL. Text from the 504, if we can win this game, Seth, the next 2 weeks is going to be a lot of fun. Oh, yes, it will be. And that's one of my overriding, I guess, commentaries about this entire playoff run here. I talked about it last week. Enjoy the ride. It's not just the 3 hours or so on game day that's a lot of fun. Those are, certainly was, this Sunday. But the time leading up to it, talking about the Saints, talking about the playoffs and preparing for the Rams coming in and being a part of the national discussion here, whether it's the team, whether it's Drew Brees, all the talk there, Michael Thomas, your team is front and center nationally and one of the stories really across the country right now. This is like, soak it up. This doesn't happen very often. Last time it happened was about a decade ago, 8 years ago, 9 years ago. So soak it up. Enjoy the ride. Enjoy the ride here. It just occurred to me, last week as I saw this matchup kind of formulating itself, and it happened, Rams against the Saints here. How much of an embodiment this is of all of the cliches we hear about the coastal elites against middle America here, right? Rams are the very flashy, glitz and glamour L.A. team. Saints are a well-built, deep, kind of hardworking, middle America kind of team. White collar against blue collar. Hollywood against the South here. And the teams are built that way. It's not just because the team's from L.A., but you look how this Rams team was formulated. All the free agent signings, all the talk about, the West Coast genius and Todd McVay. Don't hear a lot of talk about Sean Payton anymore outside, he's one of the best coaches in the NFL. And then the conversation instantly switches back to Sean McVay and his brilliance and everybody who even served him his coffee. Joe Buck, great line that he had in the Rams game over the weekend. Sean McVay's barista got 3 interviews in the NFL. It was a good line, Joe Buck, Fox play-by-play guy. I still maintain, and I guess this will be the litmus test of this on Sunday, that it is an extremely high-risk strategy that has not worked in the NFL before to sign all of the name aging guys on defense like they did with the Tlaib and Sue and Peters, and they traded for Fowler, although he's not an old guy at all, and try to build there without a lot of depth, right? Just a lot of star power, a lot of L.A. Hollywood glitz and glamour, and a lot of depth. And I thought this would come back to bite them. Now, maybe one of the reasons they haven't is they've stayed relatively healthy. Tlaib missed time, but he's back. All these old guys on defense, they've stayed healthy. But I still believe, and I disagree with Greg Rosenthal on this, I think the Saints are the better, deeper, more talented team. I think that there's been so much focus and so much talk about all those guys I talked about over on offense, Gurley and Goff and Sean McVay and the offensive line. They're very good offensive line, by the way. That's one of the areas where I'm just in full agreement. That might be the best offensive line in the National Football League. But this will be the litmus tests of it. There are yards, points, and a lot of them to be had against this Rams defense. They had the 28th ranked run defense in the league this year. One of the worst run defenses in the league. Cowboys couldn't run against this team. I think that's because the Rams knew they couldn't throw the football. Saints can throw the football. That's going to open up a lot of lanes for Mark Ingram and Alvin Kamara. And this is a home Saints crowd. And again, we went through the statistics for Jared Goff, the splits home against the way. That disparity is real. This offense is not the same on the road. Remember the Rams, when they put up, Tim, 6 points in Chicago about a month ago? Not saying the Saints defense is Chicago. They're not. But this is the best defense that they will have played since Chicago. This is a much better running defense than Dallas had. Dallas, great defense at home, not a great defense on the road. Saints, a very good defense at home, kind of like the Cowboys, not a great defense on the road. But this pass rush can get going. They have their better run-stopping defensive linemen available, and I say that because Sheldon Rankins tore his Achilles, incredibly important in the pass rush game. And look, he was having his finest season of his career. They will miss him. There is no doubt about that. They will miss Sheldon Rankins. But if you're talking about stopping the run, which obviously we saw what the Rams did against the Cowboys, Stallworth and Davison and Onyemata on that interior, along with Cam Jordan and Marcus Davenport rotate in and out, those guys are capable. Alex Okafor, too, didn't even mention him. Text from the 504, New Orleans, Middle America, really? Look, I'm just making a point here. Do you think New Orleans is Los Angeles, right? When you talk about the coastal elites and all the glitz and glamour of L.A., it's kind of an embodiment here, the New Orleans Saints against the L.A. Rams. L.A. built their team for their market. Star power everywhere. Not a lot of depth. Very pretty. You pull back the curtain, you take the makeup off here, and there's a lot of blemishes. You pull back the curtain of that home field on the offense, you take off the makeup of Sean McVay being able to be in Jared Goff's headset until 15 seconds on the play clock without any crowd noise. Yeah, it's not as pretty. It's not the girl you thought you took out the night before. You're waking up to something else in the bedroom. Tim? You got to say that on the air. What was that?
I said I had no comment.
Okay. I'll leave that one where it is. Remember, you can win Saints tickets with us, wwl.com/contest. Click on the contest link. Complete the entry form by noon on Thursday, and you can win your tickets to the NFC Championship game. Also, if you want some extra cash every weekday, you can win $1,000 12 times a day in our Intercom National Secret Words Cash Contest. You can listen to our primetime shows, Tommy Newell, Scoot, and then Sports Talk right before the top of the hour news to get the code word, and then you can text that word to 72881, $1,000 cash every weekday, 7 a.m. to 6 p.m. We will take a break. We've got a Pelicans interview coming up. Sports Libs, though, next. Text from the 504, went to bed with Shania Twain, woke up with Mark Twain lying next to you. Yeah, a little analogy there with that Rams defense. Yeah, a lot of makeup there. A little ugly when you pull the mask back. They just haven't been good. I'm just sorry. They have not been good, especially on the road. We'll see here, though. They got one game to prove that they're better than the Saints here. And look, objectively, they come in here and they win this game in the NFC Championship. You're going to have to say they're the better team. See what happens here. Got six more days. All right, time for a little Sports Libs here. We do this every night on the show. It's just like Mad Libs, sports style. You ever played that game on road trips or wherever? Tim Zimmer's got a handful of questions and statements. There's a blank in there, and we've got to fill them in. You can play along on the text line at 870-870. I have not seen these. Tim, you're pretty good at coming up with some good ones. What you got today, man?
All right, the first question is, blank has the best remaining receiver corp of the four remaining playoff teams.
I'd have to go Kansas City just because Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce. I mean, just those two guys alone.
Well, I said wide receiver, but I guess you can add in Kelce.
Well, you said receiving core.
Okay. Okay. I had wide receiver, but yeah, you're right. We'll do.
Yeah. Okay. If it's just receiving core, you're probably still going to have to go Los Angeles.
I'd say the Rams.
But yeah. If you're just saying wide receivers, Rams, but if it's receiving core, and I would count Travis Kelce as a de facto wide receiver here, let's be honest.
He's a receiver.
Hill and Kelce trump anything anybody else has. And I'm sorry, go ahead and at me, Saints fans. Michael Thomas is the best receiver, true wide receiver still playing. There is no doubt about that. Let's be honest here. Not a lot of depth behind him. Ted Ginn looked lost at times yesterday, but I guess that's maybe something we'll touch on later in the week. Yeah, don't get me started on Ted Ginn either. I'm trying to keep it positive here today, Tim.
If Gronk was healthy and Chris Hogan was actually pretty decent this year, he's been terrible. And if Josh Gordon were healthy, or he was, you know, in his right state of mind, I think that you could go Patriots here. But you're right; it's probably the Chiefs.
Well, I mean, if Cameron Meredith had returned to form 2 years ago when he caught 1,500 yards, and Ted Ginn was 25 now instead of 30 plus, I mean, the Saints would have the best receiving corps.
Question number two: drafting Kyler Murray in the first round of the NFL draft would be blank.
Highly questionable. Because I don't know, and I'm not saying I have the answer that he can't play quarterback in this league. I mean, who says with these new systems and the motion and the design of these brilliant offensive minds that they can't turn Kyler Murray into a sensational quarterback? I would say, though, it is highly risky. It is extremely risky, very questionable here. You're talking about a quarterback who is listed at 5'9", who doesn't quite approach that, actually. He's more like 5'8.5", 5'8 plus. He would be the shortest quarterback since Doug Flutie, who is 5'10 in this league. Questionable, especially if you're talking about taking him in the upper half of the first round. Boy, you waste that draft pick, you blow that draft pick, and you could set your franchise back here, especially if you're going to try to throw him at quarterback and teach him, and it doesn't work out for 2 to 3 years. You're just going in for a decade of irrelevance, maybe.
Hey, Christian Ponder and E.J. Manuel both got selected in the first round.
Well,
so,
yeah, he's better than those guys. Look, I've said it. Don't at me, Kyler Murray fans. I think he should have won the Heisman. Most sensational college player I watched this year, and that, yes, I even include Tua in that conversation. I don't know if I'm firmly on a don't draft him. You know, I'm not on that pedestal. I'm just saying, you know, I'm glad I'm not a GM making that decision, because that could set your franchise back a long ways.
All right, question number three. The AFC Championship being played in 10-degree weather or below zero is blank.
Great. This is awesome. Fantastic. How football is supposed to be played. I have heard so many people here this last year say, well, I hope the NFL goes to just all indoor stadiums or retractable roofs. What? We love the dome here. But one of the reasons why NFL football is so special, at least to me, is the variety of venues that you have, the variety of weather that you have. I love when the Saints have to go play outdoors. I love when it's a Snow Bowl, Packers and Bears late in December. I love, what was it, like a negative 15-degree game? Vikings and Seahawks a couple of years ago. Give me the 10-degree weather in Kansas City and then a dome field game here in the other NFC title games. I love it. Awesome. No problem at all.
Well, there was supposed to be a snowstorm in Boston anyway this weekend, so who knows. It probably would have been bad either way, depending on where the game was being played.
I tell you this, I wouldn't take Kansas City with a 10-foot pole. They're playing in New England in a title game.
Question number four, Cody Parkey has a blank percent chance of returning next season as the Bears kicker.
I'm going to actually give it 80% here. After they found out it was block, what his teammates and his coaching staff has said here.
Did you hear what they had to say today?
No, maybe. I guess I missed it.
Well, Cody Parkey went on to the Today Show and talked about his missed kick, and also the coaches did not know about it. So they were, you know, they found out this morning that he was on the show, and they weren't very happy about this. So let's just say I don't think he's going to be back next season.
Well, I didn't know he was on the Today Show.
A reporter did say they have a better chance of getting Kareem Hunt than Cody Parkey next season on the team.
Kicking is such a weird position. It's so mental. Now, if you would have framed the question, do I think he should be back? No, I don't, because I've just seen too many of these kickers. Who was the guy? Why am I blanking on his name? The Minnesota kicker that missed the 23-yarder? Blair Walsh. And then Pete Carroll signed him in Seattle and thinking that was a reclamation project, and he missed three kicks, game-winning kicks with Seattle that probably cost them a playoff
spot.
They're
both from South Florida, so just know that if you have a South Florida kicker, you're probably going to miss a big kick in a big-time situation. Will Lutz is from Georgia, so we're good.
Text from the 504 says zero chance he's back with the Bears. Well, now I heard about this. Yeah.
He went on the show today. Uh-huh. And
yeah, you're probably right.
Did not let the coaches know.
Yeah, you're probably right. I'm probably wrong on this one.
Last question. Patrick Mahomes joining the list of Jake Plummer, Peyton Manning, Joe Flacco, and Mark Sanchez to keep Tom Brady from playing in the Super Bowl would be blank.
Not unexpected, because I think – the Chiefs, not only should they be favorites, they are by 3 points in Las Vegas. I really like the matchup for Kansas City in this one. I'm not saying that Tom Brady is Jared Goff, the home road splits, nor is New England and this team. This team can win on the road. They've done it before. But this is Kansas City in a title game. They have not played in the Super Bowl here in over, 55 years since 1963. They haven't played in a Super Bowl, something like that. You want to talk about how jacked up the Superdome has been? Watch out for the loudest stadium in the world. That is going to be incredible. I expect Kansas City to win. I think, as he played sensational. Sensational is wrong. No touchdown pass. He played very well. He didn't scuffle along like I thought Jared Goff scuffled along against the Cowboys. I think it wouldn't be unexpected at all if he joins that rank. The one on there that it's Jake Plummer.
You know why? Because it was in Denver. Tom Brady's kryptonite is in Denver, Mile High Stadium. He cannot win there, especially in the playoffs.
Yeah. Mark Sanchez didn't even surprise me as much as the Jake Plummer one did, because the Jets had just an incredible defense those years. All right, that's Sports Libs. Nice job here. When we come back, we'll talk a little Pelicans as they are at half. Let's check the score here. It is 66-63, Pelicans leading the Clippers on the road. Anthony Davis, 17 points, so he had 13 points there in the second quarter. Talking Pels coming back here on the last lap. Welcome back to the show. Pelicans leading the Clippers at halftime, 66-63. And we bring on in Chris Connor here at halftime. Covers the Pelicans for thebirdrights.com to talk about it. Chris, welcome into the show. Glad to have you on for the first time.
Seth, man, it's definitely a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, no problem, man. I got to ask you about this. I didn't see it. You know, I'm on the air with one eye on the game. What happened with this technical foul? Patrick Beverley's running around with Anthony Davis's shoe and then gets called for a T? What's going on here?
Well, Anthony, he ends up losing his shoe on the offensive side of the floor. They go back. The Clippers come up the floor, and you know, AD's on the other side of the floor. Like, we can't figure out what's going on. The Pels are playing 4-on-5 defense. And then I'm assuming Pat Bev, I mean, doing what he does, he picked up the shoe and, you know, threw it out somewhere and got it off the floor. And they gave him a technical. Exactly the first time I've actually seen him do that before.
that's pretty hilarious. I'm just picturing Ian Clark running around trying to get the shoe back and Beverly just hiding it from him.
That's Pat Bev being him, man.
Yeah, no doubt about it. All right, again, Chris Connor joining us at Impatient Bull on Twitter. And Pelicans here on the road, you know, they've been so much worse on the road than at home, but a pretty good half for them as they outscore the Clippers, I think 43-13 or something like that in the paint. And Anthony Davis in that second quarter, he really got rolling, Chris.
Absolutely. You know, in the first quarter, you know, he seemed to be struggling a little bit with the length and the different array of looks that the Clippers started to show at him or throw at him there. And it seemed to be I believe late in the first quarter, or maybe in the second quarter, he got a tip in and started, you know, to get his game rolling a little bit. You know, I mean, you know, for the most part, the Pelicans eventually started to throw the ball in the post, especially anytime Gallinari was down there on him. Definitely, anytime Gortat is on him, is gonna create some type of issues. But if he can use his quickness I definitely like to see him get to the free throw line a little bit more there, but it was good to see his jumper working, his fadeaway. It was fun to watch.
Alvin Gentry seems to be sticking with this rotation. Chris, I like Julius Randle in the starting lineup. I think he's just been too good to keep him out of the starting lineup. He has 15 points plus 14 in the plus minus today. And Nikola Mirotic off the bench. Do you think this is something that he's going to stick with pretty much the rest of the season, I guess, pending some kind of trade before the deadline?
Well, I mean, I think it depends on what's working. You know, Julius brings a different level of aggression and instant offense from the minute he touches the ball. He doesn't need others to really create for him. You know, I mean, I think eventually, you know, you may see Alvin sneak Nico back into the starting lineup just because of the fact that when Julius is on the bench, you know, I mean, he provides a little bit more to your second unit versus Nico, who I think you know, just plays ultimately better with that starting group. We saw him last year, you know, when they tried him in the bench role, it really didn't work out. Once they put him in the starting lineup, that's when he took off and the team started to take off with that big winning streak. So I think it's working right now. I mean, Alvin can continue to throw as many things at the wall that he wants to until something sticks, man. So I'm all for whatever gets the job done.
Yeah, it's a good point. Did you think Julius Randle would be this good when he was traded for? I thought this was a great fit for him, but even I didn't think he would be this productive in the minutes that he's getting here for the Pelicans.
Well, I mean, we forget how young he is. You know, I mean, when you look at the fact that in L.A., he struggled with a bunch of different things. I mean, at one point it was his weight. He had some injuries. It was an inconsistency in the lineup, his minutes. You know, it never seemed like he really had a role. And there were constant rumors year in and year out about, you know, who Julius, you know, who they should trade him for, where he should go, how are they going to, you know, where they're going to send him to bring in the next superstar. You know, and it feels like with the Pelicans, they were, you know, it's kind of after he kind of settled in last year with the Lakers and had his best year. You know, I feel like the Pelicans were, you know, a team that said, you know, we want you, we have a role for you, and we're not really gonna switch it up. Now, he's been in the line, he's been in the starting lineup and off the bench, but regardless, he's gonna play his 25 minutes and you know, maybe sometimes closer to 30. But he seems, you know, consistent and confident in what they're asking him to do, and they're not really trying to change him too much either.
Talking to Chris Connor, who covers the Pelicans for BirdRights.com. Again, Pels up on the Clippers in L.A., 66-63 at halftime. What do you make of the progression of Frank Jackson here? Finally getting some minutes the last week plus, and he's been pretty productive in those minutes, Chris.
You know, I mean, being young, you know, I mean, because Frank was everyone's off-season dog, and we saw a lot of the off-season videos, the workouts. You know, his first half quarter of summer action, summer league action, got everyone excited. You know, I think for him, man, it's just good to see him out there with confidence and knowing that Alvin Gentry is going to continue or appears to continue to stick with him. When you're a young player and you're trying to find your way, being in and outside the lineup, you know, can be, you know, a little, you know, it can be a little disheartening. It can really mess with your confidence. But he seems to have a nice core group around him. Him and Jrue Holiday are really close. And ever since, you know, he went to the D League for that short stint and come back, he's been playing with a different level of confidence. You know, you see him moving off the ball. You see him, you know, creating for others after he catches passes, coming off the screen, his outside shooting. Just the overall fight and effort that he brings a team that needs it consistently from an energy level perspective. We know the athlete that he is, but it's just good watching him out there being active and making plays just off of his energy and effort alone.
Well, Chris, this is the first time I've talked to you. I am wondering, bird's eye view of this Pelicans team right now. Have you hit the panic button yet? Or are you kind of hold the course here with everybody that's returning from injury? What camp are you in?
Man, I mean, I'd like to see what they do as they, you know, continue to, you know, to gel a little bit. You know, it just feels like the team and the franchise is always playing catch up, you know, and now, you know, they're finally healthy again. And hopefully, you know, we can see what a full team can look like in correspondence to the start that they had. I mean, I don't think anybody would disagree with the fact that they still need an upgrade at the small forward position, or even if it's a guard, a wing, period, ironically for a team named the Pelicans. will definitely help them out. I mean, I think as they continue to stay healthy, they seem to be saying all the right things. They seem to have the positive guys in there. They just got to bring it. And the good thing about tonight against the Clippers, I mean, when things went down, when the Clippers made runs, they didn't panic. They continued to show effort on both sides of the basketball. They didn't turn the basketball over for once. I mean, they had two turnovers, which is unlike anything the Pelicans have been doing this season. So if they can continue to give efforts like this, and I mean, I think they'll be okay. We definitely need to see a wing addition soon, but I'm doing my best to stay patient.
Chris Connor covers the Pelicans for thebirdwrites.com on Twitter at Impatient Bull. Chris, really appreciate having you on, man. Enjoy that second half. Thanks so much.
No problem, man.
All right, Chris Connor, again, find his work at thebirdwrites.com, and we'll see what the Pelicans do here in the second half, up by a tray, 66-63. Again, 17 for Davis, 15 for Randle, 12 for Drew in that first half. One final thing here to throw in the pot, as we have about 8 minutes left in the show. Clemson, and this is not a political discussion at all. This is a food discussion. Clemson went to the White House. Tim, did you hear about this? They were served for their meals McDonald's, Burger King, Domino's Pizza, Wendy's. That was the spread for your national championship football team. What do you think of that? A little slap in the face there? Or, hey, I guess it's America. It's fast food. I don't know. You tell me. 504-260-1870. Text line 870-870. I'm Seth Dunlap, and this is The Last Lap on WWL. The second half just underway. Pelicans have scored the first 4 points, first couple of buckets of the second half. Their lead has expanded to 7, 70-63. Pelicans 3 games under 500, 2.5 games out of a playoff spot right now. Still 39 games left in this season for New Orleans, so plenty of time to make up that ground. Again, I was asking before the break, and this happened today, Clemson, the national champions in college football, they made their White House visit. And they were served, and look, I'm just going to be honest, this is not a political discussion. This is a food discussion. They were served McDonald's, Burger King, Wendy's, and Domino's. What? It seems like a slap in the face to me, but Tim, you had a pretty interesting take on this that I hadn't heard yet. What was your take?
Yeah, I was thinking, from what I heard, it was because the government shut down, so they can't have anybody in there actually cooking in the White House, so...
But can't you... Yeah.
So I guess they had to serve whatever was quick and fast.
You got to be able to get some takeout that's better than that.
And Boston Market would have been good.
I mean, get a rotisserie chicken or two in there. Come on. I'm not bagging on that. Look, I've eaten at all of those places in the last, you know, few months probably.
I will tell you what's worse than fast food. Cold fast food.
Oh, God. Oh, man. Can you – any burger, a fast food burger that's just been sitting there for an hour? Oh, boy. Nasty. Yuck. Sorry, Clemson. Do better next time. Can you imagine? I just want to, Tim, put yourself in that. Like, you walk into the White House, you got your suit on, you're a little overwhelmed. Like, wow, I'm here. I get to meet everybody. I'm in this place. And then you walk in and you got fast food burgers there.
Cold chicken nuggets that
right.
are waiting for you.
Oh, man. All right, Joey in Pearl River. You're closing us out here. Joey, what's going on?
Hey, Seth, did they say anything about having them waiting in their paper to-go bags, or were they?
They were the so they were yes, they were wrapped, but they weren't like paper to-go bags. It was the Big Mac box or the burger box. They had those there, so it was at least enclosed. Yes,
that's pitiful, man. That is pitiful.
Yeah, I agree. Totally.
But I just had a little question for you to ponder. You don't have to answer it tonight. Just think about it because of the loss of Sheldon Rankins. Okay. Mantau Teo has been on, has been a healthy scratch for quite a while now. And with him being so ground oriented, okay, and maybe looking to supplement the center of, the field, what do you think about them taking him off of, and activating him instead of trying to maybe force a practice squad player or something in that slot with just a couple of days, practice you know, with the regulars.
Interesting. Manti Te'o. Good question, Joey. I'll tell you what. I'll think about that, and we'll answer it tomorrow as we are out of time. But that is a good question. Final update on our opinion poll. Who is most responsible for the Saints' comeback? Courtesy of Blue Runner Foods, 37%. Saying Marshawn Lattimore, Michael Thomas, 24%. Sean Payton, 24%. Thanks to our guests, Doug Mouton, Greg Rosenthal, Mike Scarborough, and Chris Connor. Thanks to Tim Zimmer behind the glass and Helen Santani for producing the show today. Our program director, Diane Newman. And thanks to you for listening. If you missed any of the show, check the podcast, Apple Podcasts, WWL.com, and the Radio.com app. We are back tomorrow, same time, same place, 8 to 11 here on WWL. Oh, no, we're not. LSU basketball tomorrow. We're back Wednesday. Enjoy LSU basketball tomorrow. I'm Seth Dunlap saying so long. And here is our, as always, moment of Zen. It's Golden Tate kind of calling out his own team in Philadelphia. Listen to this.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.